listening to a special podcast recorded at the Royal Holloway Science Festival on March 23rd, 2013. The festival itself was a week-long event starting with a bee opera. You can find out more about that on episode 178. Included a discussion of science facts and science fiction behind the War of the Worlds, and culminated in an open day for the public. There was a science alternative fate, displays from the departments, and us interviewing scientists in front of a live audience. This podcast is brought to you by The Pod Delusion. The Pod Delusion is a podcast about interesting things, from science to culture to politics, all from a pro-science rationalist point of view. You can find out more at poddelusion.co.uk. This interview is with Professor Rafael Yanez, part of the Biological Science Department, who investigates gene therapies. So to start off and to pronounce your name properly, because I'm terrible, can you tell us what you do and who you are?
So my name, pronounced the Spanish way, is Rafael Yanez, but after about 15 years in the UK, I've stopped bothering about that, and I just take it as it comes. I work here at Holloway. I've been here for about 6 years, and I work on genetic therapies, which effectively means trying to use genes as medicines to treat a number of diseases, some of them inherited, like the ones that are passed on from parents to children, but we can treat many other diseases like Parkinson's using the same technology. And if it was legal, you could potentially do genetic enhancement using the same technology.
Oh, wow. So we read a lot about gene therapies and things like that, but how, for someone who doesn't study genetics or know genetics, what is a gene therapy?
Okay, so genes are made of DNA, which is something inside in every one of our cells. A gene will normally make a protein. In actual truth, it would probably make several similar to each other, but we say one gene will make one protein. And if you are unlucky enough for one of those not to work, you may be lucky and then nothing will happen because others will make up for it, or you can be very unlucky and develop a very severe disease, like cystic fibrosis, as a big example. So what we try to do in using genetic therapies is use genes in order to try to treat diseases. In some cases, you can just use the gene that is faulty, but you can think of ways in which a gene may help a patient in a certain way, and you can treat perhaps cancer or AIDS, HIV infection, using genetic therapies.
Cool. So how does gene therapy differ from like a conventional therapy? So if you had Parkinson's, for example, what would be a conventional treatment versus gene therapy?
Well, we are hoping that with gene therapies we can actually cure a disease as opposed to improve the symptoms of the disease. That is a critical difference. And specifically for inherited diseases, by delivering, effectively putting in the gene that is faulty, you may be able to correct the disease altogether, as opposed to having to treat the person regularly with medication that will have significant side effects and, in fact, may only treat your symptoms, as opposed to actually curing you. We're working on something that is really exciting, that instead of actually putting in an extra copy of the gene that is faulty, we can go in and mend the faulty gene. We call that genome surgery. It really is the latest in genetic therapies, and is something in which Holloway is at the forefront.
So how do you actually administer a gene therapy? I'm imagining, you know, getting an injection or some sort. I can't imagine it because it's, you know, our genes.
It really depends on what you are trying to treat. The easiest way, because our bodies are very good at rejecting DNA. A DNA can come from a virus, and bodies don't like viruses, so they are very good at preventing them from coming in. So effectively, we hijack viruses. We take viruses. My lab works on HIV-related viruses, so we effectively take away all the bad from HIV, put in our cargo of interest, the gene that we want to deliver, and let that modified HIV, which carries no bad anymore, to deliver the gene to the cells. But how you do that depends on whether you are trying to treat a disease in the blood or in the eye or in muscle. And you may use different viruses as your carriers for the genes. But the principle is similar. We just take viruses and let them do the job.
So how do you select which genes to target? And similarly, how do you choose what kind of virus to use as a treatment?
Well, because as you will know, when you get a disease which is caused by a virus, not every virus attacks the same organ or tissue. So we know from experience what viruses are particularly good at entering into certain tissues. We can actually now engineer those viruses to make them better or to make them enter different tissues. So we basically use a lot of information available out there from experience to decide what would be the best virus for a specific tissue. And then depending on the kind of therapy we want, we may use one that inserts itself into the genome, so it stays there forever, or one that does not insert itself in the genome, so if the cells divide, it's lost gradually, so it can give you a temporary therapy. Or there are many other factors that we may want to consider because our bodies are very good and the immune system will try to reject the therapy. So there are many factors to consider.
So gene therapy is kind of, in the last few years, it's the big thing, as it were. Probably, you know, we've had the decoding of the human genome and things like that. But what's the kind of potted history of gene therapy? Like, when did it first start? What are the kind of things that prompted it as a science?
Well, when people realized that diseases were caused by faulty genes, and before the Human Genome Project, but at the speed because of the Human Genome Project, we now know that there are about 7,000 disease genes, basically. Or rare diseases, most of which are caused by faulty genes. By following on that logic, you can guess that perhaps you may be able to treat the disease if you are able to put back in a working copy of the faulty gene. So that was the logic. The history, in reality, started maybe 15, 20 years ago when people tried to treat children with a type of immunodeficiency. That's the type of disease in which the body cannot attack or cannot protect itself from infections. And that particular attempt was not successful. It was really a very early one, but it kicked to start the field. And it's gone on from strength to strength. And now there are certain experimental therapies that are working effectively, and many more that are coming up that are very likely to succeed.
In certain publications, like perhaps the Daily Mail, let's say, they might hyper-publicize something like, this is the X gene, like it's the gene for violence and stuff. How badly does the kind of therapies get represented? Do you have pet peeves? Would they say this is going to cure something in like 5 years? Or is everything just amazing? Should we trust it all?
Well, I mean, it was the same idea with cancer. People were looking for the magic bullet that would be able to cure all cancers. And now we know that every cancer is different, and every cancer needs a different type of treatment. So you really have to understand what type of cancer disease that person has in order to provide as much as possible individualized treatment. And with gene therapy, it's a little bit the same. You need to understand what the disease is. Depending on that, you will choose a particular type of vector and a gene, perhaps, to treat it. So there is no magic bullet. For every disease, we will have to develop a treatment. And that is effectively what is ongoing. Some diseases are leading, but the hope is that many more will follow. There is an International Rare Disease Research Consortium, which was set up a couple of years ago. The European Union, the United States, Canada, Japan are all part of that consortium. And their declared goal is to be able to treat 200 rare diseases by 2020 and to actually diagnose most of them. Because for many rare diseases, the problem is diagnose. Because people can take easily 5 to 7 years to be diagnosed properly, to be told what their disease is. And that really is a tragic issue.
And I guess the problem with rare diseases, it's not like, you know, a common cancer where there'll be loads of research money put in, because it's basically pharmaceutical companies can invest in it and then sell the drugs to various people who need to be treated. But rare diseases must be really difficult to get kind of the interest in them, because they're probably not going to be a profitable drug to administer because not many people have the disease. Hmm.
Having said that, that is all correct, but pharmaceutical companies are now retaking an interest in gene therapy because they can see that there are real successes happening in the field. But it is true that the government and in the UK, the Wellcome Trust, are really not investing significant amounts of money into rare disease research. At the moment, this type of research is very strongly supported by patient associations who support research on their diseases of interest. To give some examples, the Spinal Muscular Atrophy Trust, the Muscular Dystrophy Campaign. So they will focus on a small set of diseases of interest to them. And they support both the patients and the researchers. They provide grants for research. They provide information and support services for the patients. So they are critical. We wish and we would like to encourage both the big funders, the government, and the Wellcome Trust to consider that these diseases are a very big issue. If you take every disease is rare on its own because, by definition, they affect fewer than 1 in 2,000 people. But take 7,000 diseases altogether, and they affect 6% of people and take 20% of the health budget.
Oh, wow.
So that's big money. And the money that is coming or going into rare disease research at the moment is nowhere near 20% of the research funds available. So we would certainly like that to be matched. One more thing, in the current terrible financial climate, some patient associations are struggling to survive. And very, very sadly, for instance, the Primary Immunodeficiency Association folded last year. And that, for the patients affected by those diseases, is tragic because they lose all the support services.
Oh, well. So to study this, what kind of experiments do you do here to look into this?
So when we are trying to develop a new therapy for a genetic disease, we have to put together a DNA vector, that's what we call it. Effectively, in our case, in our lab, it will be a modified virus that carries the gene that we believe can cure the disease. And for ASTAR, we work with cells in culture. So we can grow cells, human cells or animal cells, on a plate. Those cells will be faulty, they won't work properly, and we can see whether we can express the gene, so we can get the gene to work properly in those cells in culture. If we can achieve that, then the next stage is to demonstrate whether we can cure an animal that is affected by the disease. And those animals are available, and we can do experiments and test whether the disease is cured in the animals. And if that is the case, really, you are in business, so to speak, and you can start considering the possibility of going on to a clinical trial where you will be able to treat the affected patients.
There was something a few weeks ago that said there was a puppy. It was like the first example of a gene therapy curing a disease in a puppy. Do you know about that story?
Yeah, there are a number of stories. There is a very high-profile one, which is Duchenne muscular dystrophy being cured in dogs, because there are some dogs that are affected by one of these rare diseases. Duchenne is actually one of the strengths of Royal Holloway research in our own Duchenne muscular dystrophy and therapies for it by Professor George Dixon here at Holloway. And it is one of the success stories, and that is undergoing clinical trials with the involvement of Royal Holloway. So we are very, very hopeful.
That's very exciting. Mm. Who knew that was happening in Egham, which is just, you know, lovely area just outside of London. So we've asked a few people this, but gene therapy, since it's quite newer, or newer in terms of science, not like chemistry or something, what got you interested in the field?
Well, I did a doctorate, a PhD in Spain, and I got interested. I was working with viruses of animals. And I decided that I wanted to do further study, but using those viruses to try to treat diseases. So when I moved to the UK back in 1995, I looked for a place where I could do that, gene therapy. And that got me going in the field.
That's amazing. Does anyone else have a question about genes or gene therapy? I see some bunch of interesting students here. Any questions? Put you all on the spot. Oh, yeah. Are there any kind of ethical... I guess the idea is if we can play with our genes, what, you know, we could become superhuman and things. Do you worry about those kind of ethical, kind of weird science fiction things?
Well, it is science fiction, but it's not that much science fiction, because the same technology that you can use to cure patients could be used for genetic enhancement. So people, if an athlete decides to inject himself or herself with erythropoietin, that's a standard doping. But you could give them the erythropoietin gene, and then in a one-off, they'll be producing erythropoietin for life. So the same technology can use to either treat a disease or potentially affect genetic enhancement. That is an ethical issue, but we know that that would be illegal. It would be like treating or applying a gene therapy to the germline. That is illegal. You cannot do it by law. But, you know, technically it is very similar. But there are significant ethical concerns with genetic therapies, because often you would like to apply them as early as possible. If a child has a progressive genetic disease, the earlier you treat, probably the better. But treating very, very young people, it has significant ethical concerns, and it's very difficult to get the idea through regulatory authorities. So there are a number of clinical trials in which those issues are being studied right now. The ethical implications of treating very young populations, in which the scientists believe that the treatment will be at its most effective very early on, but the clinical practitioners and the regulatory authorities are very nervous about it, logically. So it's a question of developing things in a way that is acceptable to everyone and safe. That is a critical word when you develop new therapies. It has to be safe.
Any other questions? No? Well, the last one is loads of the scientists are at different displays. Are you at a display, or which display do you recommend? I know there's a rainforest somewhere, which intrigues me.
Say that again?
There's a rainforest somewhere in the geography department, which I'm intrigued by. But are you doing anything?
Yes, we are doing three things, really. Simultaneously, we have a display in which we talk about superhumans. And even though we can think of genetic enhancement because that is fashionable and technically possible now, one of my students has prepared a display in which she shows that enhancement has been going on for a long, long time, and prosthetics and, you know, surgery for cosmetic purposes has been going on for much, much longer than we can possibly think. So that is one thing that we cover in that display. We also show current research from the lab using HIV viruses that we have modified to develop, to deliver our therapies of interest. Genome surgery, where we actually correct the mutation, the defect in the gene, as opposed to putting in an extra copy of the gene. And we also work with stem cells, because at the end of the day, really, when we talk about genetic and stem cell therapies, we are pretty much talking about the same thing. Because we genetically modify stem cells, and stem cell people genetically modify stem cells. It's the same thing. And in fact, most of the societies, the British Society and the international societies, now recognize that, and they have all become gene and cell therapy societies. So our final part of the display shows the fact that we are now able in the lab, not just us, and we didn't develop the technology, we just use it. You can now produce stem cells, not destroying embryos. So instead of making or using embryonic stem cells, we can make cells that are very much like it. We call them induced pluripotent stem cells. And you can make those using cells from the skin or from a hair follicle or from muscle. And the crucial difference is that they come from you. So if you can develop a therapy using your cells, your body will not reject it because it's coming from you. If you develop a therapy based on embryonic stem cells available out there from an embryo, and you take that up, then your body will fight it. So you would have to go on immunosuppressants like people who receive transplants. If you develop a therapy based on stem cells that come from you, then your body should not reject them. So it is a critical difference. But apart from that, using those induced pluripotent stem cells, we bypass some of the ethical concerns that were mentioned because no embryos were destroyed in producing them. We bypass the possible issue of rejection, and we can also get cells that we would never ever be able to work with normally. For instance, we work on a disease called spinal muscular atrophy. In that disease, critically, the cells that are affected are in the spine. We would never be able to get neurons from the spine of a patient. But now, using those stem cells, by taking a scrape of cell of skin from the patient, producing stem cells from it, and making those stem cells into motor neurons, we now have motor neurons as if they were coming from the spine from a family of patients. So for understanding how the disease works, that is amazing, really. Let alone the therapeutic possibility, the possibility of treating the diseases with cells that come from those stem cells. So it really is, the field is very exciting, both from the genetic side, from the stem cell side, and the reality, they are married, really. We are talking about genetic and stem cell therapies.
That was absolutely brilliant. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Liz.
And that's it. If you'd like to hear more interviews from the Royal Holloway Science Festival, just head over to poddilution.co.uk. You can also catch up with our over 3 years of archives from a regular show and special events like the Royal Holloway Science Festival. Thanks for listening.